One last thing. I always forget to do this on the accounts receivable. We mentioned this once already. I want to mention this again because in this total program, I'm going to mention it 4, 5, or 6 times because it's very important. In fact, I consider receivables and payables two of the key things for buying, running, or getting involved in business. I don't care if you want to own a little donut shop or you want to buy General Motors. You have to understand this because this is one of the basic things that make up a thing called the cash flow. And again, I'm not talking about the bottom line cash flow. I'm talking about the way the money flows through the company. Now, when we start to get involved in accounts receivable, a lot of people are going to tell you when they're selling their businesses, they want to keep their receivables. They're going to tell you they want to keep their payables. As you get involved, I want to tell you most of the time you want to take over the receivables. As you go through the rest of this program, it's going to become apparent why you want to do this, because some of the best financing you're going to find is available in this area. Now, the first thing is on receivables. There are going to be accounts receivable that are not collectible, because when you're in business and people owe you money, some of them pay on time, some of them pay 7 days late, 30 days late, 60 days late. The later the time becomes, the less chance you have of collecting. So what you're going to find later in this program is we're going to do a thing called aging. In fact, we've already talked about it once in the area of balance sheet. And what we're going to do is we're going to take you through a thing called aging. And again, aging means that we actually list the different accounts receivable that are due to this company. We actually analyze those to see if they're current or past due. And what we try to do is not buy the ones that are past due. Again, we've already talked about the exceptions to that. Now, since we're only buying the good ones and letting the seller or former owner keep the other ones, the next step we go to, we'll be talking about this later, in the offer to purchase, when the buyer buys it, we also build in a paragraph that states that the seller guarantees the ones that you're taking over, and if the seller not only guarantees, but the seller will allow us to subtract the amount that we haven't collected from the next payment that we make. And you'll see this later in the program. Continuing on now, and talking about the next category and the next item on your balance sheet, we're going to talk about a thing called inventory. And again, this is another area that we talk about a number of times. In other words, we're going to go through inventory a number of times over and over again. Now on the inventory, we're talking about inventory at cost, $50,000. In other words, the person that owns this business went out and bought this inventory, and they're reselling it to you at their cost. Now you're going to find this is what most business owners do. What you have to do is beware of those business owners that want to sell you their inventory for what they paid for it plus 50%. If they do, I want to ask you a question. Are you paying wholesale or are you paying retail? And incidentally, we don't see this very often in larger companies, but in smaller retail businesses, businesses that are mom and pops, make under $50,000 a year net, we find a number of business owners do this, and what they're doing is they're trying to show the first profit they've ever shown in their business by ripping off the buyer. So what we're saying is we normally buy it at cost. We've already mentioned this before when we're going through the balance sheet, but let me restate this. We very seldom take this inventory because when buyer and seller get together to take inventory, if it takes more than 40 seconds, they tend to fight. So we do, and again, I'm repeating what I said before, we like you to use, and we recommend that you use the inventory companies. They're listed in the yellow pages under I, and they do a very nice job. They're professional in these areas, and the cost is not very high. And I want to repeat one thing. I'm going to use these companies. They're also bonded, which means when a mistake is made, they will make it good. And why do we do this? And I'm restating a point. The buyer, I don't care how sharp they are in a business, are usually not as sharp on the inventory as the seller. This then gives the buyer an additional edge because they have this group in there that knows that inventory or that type of inventory very well. If a mistake is made, then the people that have taken the inventory will make it good. Okay, they will cover whatever mistakes they've made. So it's a good way to go. So we're buying the inventory generally at cost. The next thing we run into here, getting out of the current asset area, is fixed assets. And if you're looking at the next item on your pricing sheet or on the balance sheet on 5.5, the next item is the equipment. And what we have here is equipment, and it's priced at $40,000. Now, when you start to look at equipment, what value are we using? Because a lot of people are going to come to you and say, use a book value. You're going to say, what is a book value? Well, a book value, basically, as we stated before, is what the value is for tax purposes. In other words, they bought the equipment for $80,000 a couple of years ago. They've taken the depreciation and the ACRS over the last couple of years, and now the equipment's only worth $40,000 from a tax standpoint. That does not mean that is what the value of the business is now, or equipment is. What I'd like you to consider doing is one thing. I'd like you to realize that when you go out into the world, there's going to be two extremes of people that are going to give you values on equipment. Number one, the first one you're going to run into is going to say, hey, I bought it for $80,000. I've depreciated it $40,000. Book value now is $40,000. You say, hey, that's great. On the other hand, you're going to find a group of people, and they went down to Charlie's Junkyard last week. They bought this equipment for $200. They've now marked it up to $40,000. Why? Because everything goes up in value. Neither approach is accurate. And what I'd like you to do is I'd like you to go out to an equipment company that supplies you with a replacement equipment in this industry, and they will give you an appraisal on this equipment that you have. What do they charge? Normally nothing. Why? There's no free lunch. They want to sell you more equipment. You're also going to find that they have a book, similar to the blue book that they have in the automobile industry. It may be chartreuse, green, yellow, who knows. But you're going to find they have a book also that gives the values of the used equipment that's associated with the equipment they're selling. So you're going to find it's easy, and they're not going to charge you for it. So do find out what the equipment's worth. Because you're going to find in the past, depreciation was a legitimate thing. You'd buy equipment for $80,000, and after a couple of years, it wouldn't be worth more than $40,000 or $20,000. But today, with the inflation we've had in the last few years, there's a lot of equipment out there you're going to run into, and the equipment is worth a lot more than what they paid for it. You're going to find a lot of value in this area. In fact, this is an area that you like to contact me on all the time because you say, gosh, I'm buying this business here, and the business, the owner wants $100,000. The equipment's worth $200,000. What I'm telling you is when you run into things like this, what you've gotten is what we call is a good deal. So analyze it, get as much information as possible, and get as accurate appraisals as you can as the hard value assets. Don't go out and just wing it, because if you wing it, you may be making it plus or minus $100,000. That's a lot of money when you're pricing or valuing a business. So get as close as you can. The next area we start to get into is a thing called the liabilities, because when you're going out to buy a business, you're going to be able to buy it for the assets minus the liabilities. So you better get the liabilities in here accurately and make sure you're not paying for something that doesn't exist. As we start to look at this area, the basic one we have is the accounts payable, and we've already discussed that. But you could have other things like the taxes payable, you could have accrued salaries, and other different items that are under liabilities. Each one of these things you take on, make sure is a real expense. And keep in mind as you do this, if you happen to be the buyer, each one of these items that you do assume do what to the value you're paying? Lower it. Once we've analyzed this, so if we take the assets and subtract the liabilities, we end up with a total value of how much? $190,000, which is basically the net worth of the company. This is the net worth of the company, the book value. This is hard value assets that we're talking about right here. Now, at this point, what I want you to realize is what we have done here is just put down a summary of what? The balance sheet, the different hard value assets. Nothing magic about it. I've just tried to educate you again a little on the different hard value assets. Now, we've covered Section 3. What I'd like to do now is swing over into Section 4 and talk about the area on the front part of 5-9 that is the most difficult. You're going to have to go through this a number of times. You're going to have to work a number of businesses before this is going to start to sink in. But Section 4 is what we call the adjustment in the profit for the cost of or the return on the following items. And what you're going to find is when you get involved in business and you have money invested in cash, this is your money. If you have money invested in accounts receivable, these are dollars that you have put in that company or you have in that company that you could have placed elsewhere. Quite often you're going to find as you get involved in a business, as you go on, in the beginning you're not going to have a lot of profit. As you start to generate more and more profit, what the average American business person does, because it's the American way, is they plow back all the profits into the business. But the thing that's wrong is, there's nothing wrong with plowing back profits. The thing that's wrong is you don't keep track of what your company's paying you. If you've made a profit last year of $100,000 or pulled out $100,000 cash, and the company then has the need for $100,000 to buy new equipment, if you're going to replace that equipment and put that money back in the business, what return are you going to get? I mean, if you can go out to the marketplace and get $10,000 on that money you have, or $15,000 or $20,000, why would you lend it to your company? In fact, right now, I want you to develop a hard stance, which is an analyzing or even running your companies. You don't put the money back into the business unless the company can justify it. If you don't do that when you get involved in business, you're going to find every one of your employees coming to you and saying, let's buy this new piece of equipment. Well, if it's replacement, fine. But if you're buying something that's supposed to speed up production or you save time, If it can't justify the cost you have and the return you should be paying yourself on the money you've invested back in your own company, why are you doing it? Now, one of the classic examples we run into that may help you. Now, in this example here, we don't have this. We have real estate, but the real estate's owned by somebody else, and we pay them rent. We have a lease payment, $10,000 a year. That's great. But suppose in this example here, we did have real estate. We owned the piece of real estate. Now, which way would you go? Would you leave the real estate in the company and live rent-free? Or would you do the thing that's smart tax-wise and also psychologically? And that is to take the property that you have, the real estate, move it outside the company, and have your company make lease payments to your other company. You'll find it not only benefits you tax-wise, but you're going to find it benefits you psychologically. Why? Because your company is paying a legitimate rent. Now, the money that you have invested in real estate, most of you have been brainwashed to the extent that anytime you invest in real estate and also have a company, you know that you should pay yourself rent. Because if you invested X number, 100,000 in this piece of real estate, your company should pay your real estate division, your real estate profit center, if you want to call it that, a return, okay? Because one should pay the return to the other. Each one should pay its own way. Now, most of you are willing to do that. You say, hey, I have a couple hundred thousand invested in real estate, so I should pay myself a return of a blank amount of money. Hey, great. The thing that really gets me is as soon as we take the same amount of money, invest it in some other asset, you don't want to pay yourself. What's so sacred about real estate? What we're talking about, real estate's just a vehicle. I don't care if you invested that $100,000, $200,000 in real estate, or if it's invested in cash or receivables or equipment, whatever it happens to be. You have to pay yourself a return. And as you start to analyze a business, you have to realize if you want to compare a business like this to a service business, the service business would probably have no assets. I mean, you'd have one orange crate, two pencils, all leased, so you don't own anything. And what happens is you'd have a service company making $150,000 a year with no investment in assets. You don't have to replace the assets, which means $150,000 you're going to get to keep. In these other businesses, you're going to have to realize if you put this money in, you have to pay yourself a return. Or if you have to go out to the marketplace to borrow this money, those banks are going to want to charge you interest. I don't care what way you look at it, you have to pay a return. Now, let's start to struggle through this. And if you have trouble with this, I want you to keep in mind, if you were to go out and mail for one of those beautiful packages from one of the large merger and acquisition companies in the United States on some large company, they would have a whole section in their package on that business for sale or on their valuation that had to do with Section 4. In fact, when you look at Section 4, which is on something as big as probably four postage stamps, the large merger and acquisition people, the MBAs that work for those companies, you're going to find that they have devoted 45 or 50 pages to this one little area. So as you go through it and have trouble with it, remember, the big people do also. That's why they spend 50 pages describing something, because if it were that easy, they could describe it in one. I also like to add, if they understood it, they could describe it in one. Looking at Section 4 now, let's start at the top here in this area. And what we have is equipment. Now, if we look at the equipment that we have in this business, we have $40,000 in equipment. Now, how are we going to figure what kind of return we should pay if we had invested the $40,000 ourselves? We put the $40,000 in the business, in the equipment. Now, how much does the company pay us because of the $40,000 we invested there? What you have to do is realize that most companies, if you go out to find out what the going rate is, they're going to quote you at prime plus a certain figure. In this example here under equipment, you'll see written there P plus 3. That means prime plus 3. At the time this example was made up, we assumed a prime of 10%. Do not worry about what the example is showing you here, because as soon as you go out into the real world and start to analyze businesses, what I want you to do is call a lending institution, any lending institution, do it in the city that you happen to be in that day, and ask them what the rate would be to borrow money in this area. Now you're going to say, well, why do we use a bank lending rate? Well, the thing you have to realize is, if you were going to take $40,000 of your money from your bank account and put it in this company, you're going to say, well, I'm only getting a certain percentage, under 10%. I'm getting 8%. I'm getting 5.25%, 5.5%. Okay, that's the only interest I'm getting. So if I just get that back, that should be good enough. No, it isn't. Because what the lending institutions have done is build in your rate plus also add what? another factor for the risk factor. And what you have to realize, although you may think that you are the best owner in the world and your company is the best in the world, you have to realize that we have to build the risk factor in if we're going to lend money back to this company or figure the return. Now, on the equipment of $40,000. When we start talking about prime plus three, we've talked to the local organization, and again, I want to restate, do not memorize these numbers, because in any day, in any city, you can call these different lending organizations, banks, savings loans, whoever happens to be doing the financing, and find out from them what their rate is that day. They'll give it to you verbally over the phone. So don't memorize these. In this example here, again, we are assuming a nice even number of 10%, since it's a number that we have not run into very often. Well, let's say we had 10% this day, prime. That's what they quoted. You'd find the bank then, our lending institution, would quote, say, prime plus three, based on their risk factor of this type business, which means they'd want 13% interest. That means that this year that you're going into, it's going to cost you $5,200. Because if you find in this business that you have $40,000 of equipment, you've had to either borrow at 13% or put your money in at 13%, which you'll be doing later as you start to make money, you should subtract from the $150,000 the $5,200. Because it's just like paying rent. If this happened to be rent on this equipment, this is rent that would be going out of the company. It'd be repairing you're paying yourself. Or, if you want to consider it another way, the company really isn't making $150,000. It's making $150,000 minus the $5,200 they should be paying interest to somebody, a bank, or the return they should be paying to you, the owner, or the person that invested the money or assets in this business. And again, you have to develop and understand this philosophy, and it's going to take you a while. But once you do, you're going to find that you're not going to only do a great job of analyzing businesses pricing-wise, you're also going to be a fantastic owner, because you're going to understand the basics of what makes a company work. And it's not that difficult. The next thing we have here is the inventory. And if you look over, you'll see the inventory was $50,000. As we call a lending institution, they quoted prime plus two on this, which was 12%. Which means if you take this, it's going to cost you $6,000. I mean, it's going to cost you $6,000 next year for just the return or the interest you're going to pay on just this. So it's $150,000 minus six. These numbers start to add up. In fact, you're going to find a lot of large companies will show $150,000, $200,000 net profit. And when you subtract the return, they show nothing down below. Are those companies you want to get involved in? No way. Now, you have inventory here, and it's costing you $6,000. You know the thing that's really fascinating here? You're going to have $50,000 in inventory. Suppose we're going to be able to show you ways to own $50,000 inventory, have it in there. Excuse me, I want to stand corrected on saying own. Suppose you have the $50,000 in inventory in there. And supposing the $50,000 is available. And supposing you don't own the inventory. Supposing somebody else owns the inventory. It's like owning one of these big clothing or one of these big furniture stores, and they say, we have $6 million in furniture. You go in there and say, my gosh, how can you afford so much furniture? How can you carry this much on the books? They laugh at you. They don't own any of it. Later in this program, we're going to show you how to have as much inventory as all of your competitors, and how much are you going to own? None of it, or very little of it. And again, as you do this, you're going to find asset by asset, although the person that owns the business today has all this investment, by the time we get finished with you in this program, you'll find that you don't want to own anything in the business you're involved in except what? The cash flow. Let everybody else own the equipment, the cash register. All you want to do is own money. And the people in this world that make the most money are the people that only own the money. You don't want to own these other things. Next area, the receivables. Now, when we start to think about the receivables, we talked about this before. The receivables amounted to $150,000, and we said we were in the financing for $150,000, but we then went back later and subtracted out the thing called the accounts payable. And what we were saying was we're really not in the financing business for the $150,000. We're in the financing business for the difference between the receivables and the payables. Since the accounts receivable in this example were $150,000 and the accounts payable were only $100,000, that means we're only in the financing business for how much? $50,000. Fantastic. So when we go to the bank and lending institution, they'll quote a prime plus three, we get 13%. And again, this comes to $6,500. Now remember, we're not multiplying by the $150,000 or the $100,000. We're multiplying the 13% by what? The difference between the receivables and the payables, the amount that we're in the financing business for, which comes to what? $6,500. Now, supposing later, as we go through the program, we're able to show you ways to balance out the receivables and payables. Well, if the receivables balance out the payables, Do you have to pay $6,500 next year? No way. And suppose when we get to the point where we show you how to make the payables larger than receivables. If this number is a minus figure because you're in the financing business, what happens when we show you how to put the other people in the financing business? It becomes a plus. I just want to make one comment here. We're now looking at pricing a business, but for those of you interested in buying businesses that are going through this program, I want you to realize that you're going to be able to, in the month, 2-3 months after you take over your business, take a business that you're paying X number of dollars for and add 20%, 30%, 40% to the value just by the things I'm showing you right here. You don't have to get out of your house. You don't have to get out of your kitchen. You don't have to do anything. You don't have to be creative. You don't have to increase your sales. And you'll find if you wanted to turn around in a couple of months after you bought it, you could resell your company for 40 or 50% more than you paid for it. And with only these techniques we're about to talk about here. The next area is a thing called working capital. And although most people worry about working capital and think of it as the most difficult financing to get, it's not true. You're going to find working capital is the easiest financing to get, as you'll see later in the program. You're also going to find, in most cases, it's the least expensive type of financing. In this example right here, again, we go to a lending institution. They quote us prime plus one, P plus one. And again, as in the example, we had assumed 10% prime rate at that time. You're going to have to go back and adjust it based on what it is today. It comes to 11. We take the 11% times the $50,000 we have involved in cash, our cash in this business, and it's going to cost us $5,500. Or if you've gone to a lending institution, your interest alone or the return you have to pay is how much? $5,500. Once we've added up all these adjustments, or if you had gone to a lending institution and bought this money, this would be your interest deduction. I mean, this is real money. You're going to find $150,000 subtracting the $23,200. Gives us adjusted net profit then of $126,800. Now, I'm going to show you in a minute how to use this. But I want to mention a couple things. First of all, if you're in this area and you have adjusted net profit of $126,800, you're fine. But suppose you have adjusted net profit of zero. Do we go any further? No. Because if you have a zero adjusted net profit here, what it really means is, if you go over to your right here to total value, this company is worth max the hard value assets of the company, because if the adjusted net profit comes up to zero, it's not worth any more than that. I don't care if they've shown $100,000 net on their statement or whatever. It's not worth any more than the hard value assets, because the company really isn't making money. They're only kidding themselves. Now, it could be worse. Suppose the adjusted net profit comes up to a zero figure. That means that it's worth $190,000 minus some figure. If they have had an adjusted net profit, if you went back 2 or 3 or 4 years, you may find that they've had such a bad run on the company, or they have so much equipment in the company, that if you take the adjusted net profit over the last 3 or 4 years, you may find that the true value to the right minus the negative figures for the last couple of years will give you a zero number or a minus number. What would that mean? That would mean the seller of the business should give you all the assets as a buyer and then add cash. In other words, they should give you money to take it off their hands. I want you to realize, though, in the real world, they're not going to do that. But what we want you to do, especially if you're a buyer, is to walk away. If you're a seller, I suggest you work on correcting your problems before you sell them, because you have a business that, unless you find somebody that doesn't know what the heck they're doing, somebody can rip off, you're going to find the average knowledgeable buyer is not going to buy this company. What we want you to do now is move these numbers down below, and if you'll take the $126,800 and move it down to section 5 where it says Hamel business value equals. If you just go across, you'll see we have $126,800. We're putting that in there. What I'd like you to do then is, going over to the right, is take the value that you came up with before from your balance sheet of $190,000 and you move that down under what? The total value. Now, what we have here, if you want to look at this statement, it says Hamel business value equals total value plus weighted business value times the adjusted net profit. The Hamel business value, or the value of the business you're about to come up with in this program, is going to be equal to two things. Number one, the $190,000, which happens to be the hard value assets, or the assets you can clutch and feel, and these are the assets from the balance sheet. That comes to $190,000. And then the other half of it that we're about to go into, which is to the right of the $190,000, are the things you call the intangibles. What's the value of the intangible? What's the value of the goodwill, the blue sky? Whether you call it intangible, goodwill, or blue sky, everything to the right of the $190,000 is how we arrive at that. And what you're going to see is we have a value of 3.39, and you say, where did that come from? Don't worry about that. We're going to arrive at that on the back side as we go in and try to figure out what the value is of what? The value of the goodwill, the value of the blue sky. Now, what you're looking at here, if you want to look at a value of a business, when we analyze the value of a business is worth the hard value assets, in this case, $190,000, and then also so many years' earnings. And that's what we're looking at here. And we're looking at, we're going to end up with an answer here, of 3.39 years' earnings, adjusted for return. And that's what it's based on. It's hard value assets, plus what's the value of the cash flow, the good, the location, the management, and all these other areas. Now, the thing I want you to realize as you look at this, as you go out and compare what we're doing here with other systems that are used by other people all over the country, whether it's IRS or with this Bank of America program, the only difference between our program and their program is in certain areas where they basically tend to throw a dart at a board or use subjective judgment, we have arrived at the figure mathematically. And you're going to find, because we have done it mathematically, we are not only more accurate, but we have answers that are more consistent. And as you'll find out as you use the program. Now, we now have gotten this area, and what we're going to do now is move on. Now, before we move on, there's one thing I want to mention we'll come back to later. Supposing you're analyzing this business and the profit was $100,000, can you come back later and adjust it later? Yes, you can. I'm going to show you how we do it. And it's very simple. In fact, you're going to find one of the benefits of working with weighted business values is every time you want to make a change because the seller or the buyer or something has changed in a small manner or materially, by just changing one thing and multiplying the adjustment times the weighted value and either subtracting or adding to the price, you find out what the new value is. And you're going to find in every case the system was set up so that you can make an adjustment or a change in the program in less than a minute. That's how easy it is. Okay. What I like now is we're going to be turning to the other side of the sheet, and what we're going to be doing is getting involved in a thing called hard value assets. As we continue on now with manufacturing, I'd like to restate something we talked about in the other tapes and I haven't talked about yet on this one. And that is, when you're going through this, try to clear your mind of all the other sections. And although we're going through profit, loss, and balance sheet again, the thing I want you to realize, we're going to cover it in enough detail for you. What I'd like you to do as you go through each section, just try to concentrate on the section you're working on and try not to think how it ties to anything else. Later, as we get through the program, we'll tie everything together for you. But if you want to make your educational experience a lot better and make it a lot easier, just try to take each section, learn that section as you go through it, and then later we'll tie everything together for you. It'll make it better. Now, we are now going to be going in, as we said, into the area that has to do with the intangibles, the goodwill, the blue sky. And again, these are all interchangeable terms. They all mean the same thing. And what I'd like you to do is start to get your area set up for the analysis. And I'm going to have you flip over the sheets because we've already gone through the profit, loss, and balance sheet. And I'd like you to take the profit, loss, which is 5.3, and turn it over. We'll be looking at 5.4. And you'll be looking at the business opportunity owner summary statement. And again, this is a summary of information that we have for you. And then in manufacturing on 5.5, you flip that over, and you'll find a thing called a business analysis sheet. On both these sheets, we have information that's going to be required for us to be able to go through and analyze this business to find out what the value is, to find out the value of the intangibles, of the goodwill, blue sky. One thing I want you to keep in mind as you're looking at these two sheets, and that is that this information is provided by us in this example, and as you go out in the future to value a business, this is information that you're going to have to gather from the seller of the business. Or if you happen to be the seller of the business, this is the information that you're going to have to put together as you analyze the value of the company. Now, once you have this and you have turned over page 5.9, you're looking at the back side, which is 5.10. It says Hamill Business Value at the top. You have three sheets in front of you, which I think is fine. Now, what I'd like you to do now is, since you're on 5.10, if you look straight across from 5.10 in the book, there is a thing called sheet 5.11. Now, what we have done here on this sheet on 5.11, I have listed the different categories that we're about to go through. Now, before we go through that, I'd also like you to flip one more page, and we'll come back to 5.10 and 5.11. Just flip over and to 5.13. And what it said is pricing a business with Hamill weighted business values. And what it's saying here is purpose, to establish a first step to set a standard for pricing businesses and to provide our associates with a tool to help explain to others the details of the value. And you have to realize, one of the things we haven't even discussed yet is a system like this enables all parties of the transaction to explain not only what the value of the business is, but how it was arrived at, and what each one of the segments of the value is worth. Now, question, what we're trying to tell you is no one is authorized to make copies of this program, and this is intended for the use of Arthur Himmel Business Seminar students or people also buying our tape programs. You are forbidden by law to copy this program for any other person or company. Okay, we do check this and we strictly enforce it. Why? We spend thousands of dollars developing it, and we don't mind you using it, we just don't want you using it against us. Now, this pricing system was set up to be the next step forward from the pricing of business using multipliers based on sales, and multipliers, as we already said, based on net profit. Now, you're going to find that the staff at our office has been using this system to assist former students of our program since 1978. It was first publicly announced at the Certified Business Counselors meeting in Tampa, Florida, January 79. It's been tested continually and only implemented in May 1980. In other words, we checked this out on thousands of businesses before we actually put it in. And you're going to find as we've gone along, we've checked it out continually since then. Why? To find out flaws and find out different problems. And incidentally, over the years, the only thing we really have found that we've made mistakes on have been grammar, punctuation, and spelling. I'm sure that'll continue on. Over the past 2 years, many bugs have been worked out in this new pricing system. Unfortunately, many still remain. We thought with your help and your suggestions for improvement, we should be able to work out most of the small problems. And what we're saying to you is you go through things, you find things that maybe have changed, that don't fit. If you get back to us at our central office, you'll find that we will make the changes and we'll get back with you with the changes. Warning, this pricing system is not a panacea or the living end to pricing problems. We are not intending to replace the valuable job done by the professional business appraisers. All we are attempting to do is simplify pricing. We are only attempting to set standards of prices for business in the country. Please keep in mind, these are standards against which each of you can measure the business. Over the years, as we educate more and more people, we hope to bring more business prices closer to the standards we are hoping to establish. And again, we have corrected a couple of them, as I'll mention. So remember, use this as one of your tools, but don't get hung up on an exact price. And just use it as a guide. If you find a business that completely falls outside the range of a program, you may have to come back and let us assist you. Now, what I'd like you to do now is turn back to the pages we were just talking about. And in front of you, you should have page 5-4 and 5-6. And also in your books, you should be turning to page 5-10 and 5-11. That's what we're looking about right now. Now, the back of the pricing sheet that we were talking about prior tape, which is on page 5-9, this is the back side, and we're going to be covering the thing called the weighted business value, the value of the goodwill, the value of the blue sky. We're going to be going through 25 different categories. Now, years ago when we first set this program up, and I told you we announced this in Florida at one of our national meetings, the thing you have to realize is I had a program, and I had 25 categories, and the problem I had was many of the categories had 30, 40, and 50 subparagraphs, which means it would take you somewhere between 1 year and 2 years to price or value a business. Was it accurate? Fantastic. As a matter of fact, as we analyze this, the thing we realized is we had a program that was very accurate, but how do you teach it to somebody? How do you show somebody else how to use it? They have to use computers. Finally, somebody came to me within a couple of weeks after the meeting that we had back in Florida a number of years ago and said, "Hamill, you're a typical engineer. You've over-engineered it. Why don't you broaden the parameters? Why don't you lower the number of areas, categories you have in each one, and you'll have a better system?" I said, "That'll never work. That won't be accurate." Well, it did sort of spark me, and what I did is I went back and checked. We went back and modified it and tried it. And I hate to tell you this, the person that mentioned this to me was correct. And as we went back and analyzed it, we found that unless you took the price to 4 decimal points, you didn't need the accuracy that I had built in the beginning. Because unless you wanted to price it to $500,000, 43 cents, and so many tenths of a cent in mils, you really didn't need the accuracy. And as we've done this, we find that it is very accurate without having all the categories. I want you to realize that all the equations we did develop in this area were straight-line equations, straight-line functions. So if you want to do a thing interpolate, which means take a point halfway or quarter way between the points, feel free to do it.